Good evening and welcome to Behind the News for March 28, 2002. This is Doug Henwood, and we're looking, as we do most weeks at this time, at economics and politics. And now we're joined in the studio by Silvera Lotringer and on the phone by Chris Krauss, and they are jointly the editors of Hatred of Capitalism, just published by the MIT Press, or is it distributed by MIT? Not actually published. Published by a Semiotext.
That's right.
And these are a collection of items that have appeared over the years.
Some of them have appeared either in books or in magazine called Semiotext too, and some others are not published yet.
Ah. And it's an extraordinarily entertaining collection. I've read about two-thirds of it, and it's just a lot of fun to read. I mean, aside from the serious content of it, it's also it's nice for people in the short attention span age to have many things to choose from.
Short by intense.
Yes, short but intense. Yes, there's plenty of intensity here too. So we like it short and intense. The title. When I heard about the title, I said to myself, I just must have the editors of this volume on Hatred of Capitalism. And this comes from an interview you did with Jack Smith, experimental filmmaker, who said, "I looked through your magazine and I was repelled by the title, Semiotext. It's so dry you just want to throw it in the trash," which I did. "Listen, Hatred of Capitalism would be a much better title. It's stunning. The world is starving for thoughts."
He's right about thoughts.
Right about thoughts, or the world is starving for thoughts.
I think so.
So tell us about, the project of, the journal Semiotext over, 20 years now it's been?
26 years.
What was it about for people in the audience who may not have heard of it?
Well, the idea is that, Jack Smith said, when I arrived here, I thought there was a lot happening in the States, but there was not the thought that would be useful for people here. I mean, there was some, but there was not enough. In other words, I thought that from Europe, a number of fights were going on, a kind of theoretical elaboration was going on that was directly, useful for people here. And what Semiotext tried to do was basically to import some of these ideas that were American without knowing it and make them American.
And on the, the epigraph or, I don't know what a publishing person would call this page here, says, "To the memory, a dedication to the memory of an era, 1974 to 2002. What do these dates represent to you?
The birth of Semiotext.
And is it still alive, or is that its death date?
It's still alive,
okay.
No. But
so we're not celebrating it.
We're going through a mutation, and we open up a new political series called Active Agents.
And you've had a series, Native Agents, Foreign Agents?
Yeah, the Native Agents are the fiction. They are the American leg of Semiotext. And the leg started kicking at the end of the 80s, when the French theory became a bit too fashionable, and we didn't want theory just to be fashionable. We put the emphasis on the American side then. But the idea that everything has been political from the start, it's just different angles on the same idea, which is, or the same question, that is, what is capitalism?
And now we also joined on the phone from Los Angeles by Chris Krauss, who is the co-editor of this volume. Welcome to WBAI, Chris Krauss.
Hi, thank you.
So how did you come to Semiotext? What's your connection to
As Silvera was saying, it was the late 80s, and Semiotext had been publishing the Little Black Foreign Agents Theory books, and they'd become very, very fashionable indeed. And in a sense, French theory had almost already peaked and was being absorbed into academe, and it didn't mean that we didn't want to do it anymore, but we thought we had to introduce something new. And my background was, I'd been living in New York around, in the East Village, around the St. Mark's Poetry Project, and there were a lot of female fiction writers who I knew at the time who had books who needed to get them out. And it seemed to us that there was a great deal in common with this kind of first-person female fiction writing and some of the ideas about subjectivity that were expressed in French theory. So we decided to start, as Silvera said, an American leg. The Native Agents books. We had Foreign Agents, so now we're going to have Native Agents. And we've done, that's been going since 1990. And we've continued to publish fiction. And, without being too sort of precious or self-conscious about it, it almost invariably has been first-person kind of adventure story female reportage. We've published Kathy Acker, Eileen Miles, new books by Michelle T., Shulamith Firestone.
Shulamith Firestone, what's she up to now?
Oh, this is a sad story. After having written Dialectic of Sex and, you know, being one of the most prominent spokespeople for the women's movement in the 70s, Shulamith was hospitalized a number of times for mental illness, and the story of her hospitalization is as much a story of poverty in New York City as of illness. And the book that she wrote, Airless Spaces, is this beautiful series of vignettes of people in New York who've kind of slipped through the cracks of the system in various ways. They're tiny little stories about individuals who've been kind of pushed out of the system.
Well, certainly New York over the last 10 or 20 years has not been a very friendly place for dissidents and artists and marginal figures of any kind.
No, and it's a great tragedy that so many of the prominent people in the women's movement, you know, became so marginal in later years.
Now, both of you have said the words French theory several times now, and of course there are certain kind of hardcore politicos who think French theory is the very enemy of politics and really a kind of PR agent for capitalism in some way. What is the relation of those sorts of, you know, things gathered into that name, theory, to politics and the hatred of capitalism? I mean, how does this all blend together?
It's total. I mean, how can you make politics without knowing what you are confronting? And French theory for us was some sort of science fiction coming from France. That was science fiction for the French and for European, but it was pretty much an anticipation of what capitalism was going through and was mutating to. And it didn't mean that it was that the Marxist analysis was wrong, but it meant that Marxist analysis was very useful for phenomena that arrive up to now, but capitalism itself was mutating at an increasing rate, and we needed some science fiction that would match these mutations. And mostly what people think as theory for us was total political exploration. What kind of reality we are confronting? What can you do? What can you affect it? You need to have a number of paradigms that being launched on the scene in order to try to understand where some action could be and how it could be modulated. Because obviously what capitalism has been doing is eradicate every sort of group of identity, classes, nations, etc., etc. So how could you have an action without knowing exactly how fast you have to mutate yourself in order to meet whatever challenge this system is raising?
Yes, and, you know, French theory so often gets lumped together in one big group. The theory that Semiotext published is what we like to call extrapolationist theory. Virilio, Baudrillard, Deleuze, and Guattari.
What do you mean by that?
Extrapolation in the sense that they were pushing the definition of the capital to the limit to see where it was going. Instead of saying, okay, the capital is just exploitation of the working class, well, what happened if the working class doesn't exist as working class or has become conservative in some ways too? So where is the working class? That it still exists? What kind of... So the idea was to push the system, the Marxist analysis, and realize that the capitalist system has become extremely fluid and fluidifies everything. So the struggle itself has to be as fluid and as smart in moving around as the capitalist system is. So you constantly have to reinvent new position. Otherwise, as soon as you get one set position, you become a ghetto and you've been exploited, you know, by the system.
Chris Krauss, what does the kind of first-person female writing that you were talking about have to do with this this perspective that Solera was just talking about?
Well, okay, we're talking about fluidity, right, and we're talking about, you know, different forms of life as we experience it now. Well, this is very direct and very personal, and yet it's not confessional, and that, for me, was the big difference in what we started publishing, you know, as opposed to some of the feminist literature of the 70s and 80s that was more of a memoir, more of a confession where, you know, the person understanding her own life was the goal and objective of the book. The books that we publish, that's not necessarily the objective at all. The narrator is an adventure hero who's out in the world and she's experiencing things very directly and she's giving direct feedback on her experience. But it's not self-analytical in that way. It's much more active. It's a very public eye.
Do you want
I mean, too often, you know, what we call feminist literature becomes so psychoanalytic and introspective and narrowly concentrated on the individual's own psyche and life. This is much more about a person being in the world.
The idea politically is that dialectic wasn't enough to account for the way capitalists worked. And the same way dialectics isn't enough to account for what we call subjectivity. Subjectivity, especially in America, is totally massified, you know, in political terms. So everyone.
But this is the country of the independent, rugged individual, right?
Yes, but precisely because the individual is not something that exists, it is something that has to be created and recreated. And the confrontational aspect of fiction is just that, that since capitalists tried to recreate, you know, artificial privacy, et cetera, you're going to come out and abolish, you know, these barriers that are being established. And there's this aspect that is totally polemical about fiction that joins together with some intuition of the French theory, because they do from the inside what the French theory is trying to do from the outside, taking different angle on the same problem. If America is a country of the individual, then it means that the individual is the place where the system is affecting. And that's a very neurologic place where it has to be attacked.
And fiction, we also, you know, we also like the idea that we can help to create female culture heroes, which are so lacking in our society.
And who are your female culture heroes?
Well, our writers. Eileen Miles, Michelle T., Kathy Acker, Cookie Mueller.
Well,
you know, these are people who are sort of, you know, saying I to make themselves paradigmatic of an entire generation's or culture's experience in the way that the male beat writers did, for example. And it's so, you know, so we have so little experience of recognizing a female person in this way.
Also, this I is not, as Chris said, introspective, but the I, when you reclaim your subjectivity against the one that you've been given and supposed to be yours, then immediately you're in touch with the outside. You know, it becomes the I, also like an eye to look at, to look at something. And that's where it is political, because it's an eye that is turned outward and is, by reclaiming itself, you know, provides a fresh vision of what exists outside. And that's why it is political. We don't see a difference between the fiction, the politics, and the theory. They all attempt from a different angle to define how the system operates and to find ways of dealing with it.
You know, we completely reject this idea that the individual is completely responsible for whatever happens to her in her own life, for her own destiny. You know, all of our books sort of show the individual in a context, you know, amidst a whole flux of circumstance. We're working with this woman, Tisa Bryant, San Francisco, West Indian working class background, and she's had this terrific idea of giving her autobiography told through the series of jobs that she's had since age 13.
I should say that was Chris Krauss, and I'm speaking with her and Sylvere Lotringer, who are jointly the editors of Hatred of Capitalism, a collection from Semiotext, distributed, not published, by MIT Press. And, well, let's talk about the hatred of capitalism. You know, this is a time when capitalism's great triumph. And can we do more than hate it? I mean, is it just become so dominant and so irresistible that there's nothing much to do but complain, or is there a way really to transform it?
Well, partly it is a joke. You know, I mean, what can you how can you hate what you are? No, because we're not outside of the system. And in a way, it's a joke, but it's a very serious joke, because it is a system that we're in that permeates everything we do, but it is not a system that we like, and especially not the way it operates. So in the hatred, this idea you have to bring things out. And that was actually the strategy of the Baader-Meinhof. They wanted to do some armed struggle in order to bring the state to show its face, its hateful face, you know, its dictatorial face. Well, now these things happen without, you know, I mean, of course, after September 11, we see that a little bit of terrorism is very good for the system, because the system is always ready to jump on it and to push things further away from what we would want, right? So the hatred itself is a certain way of saying, okay, this is a system that we don't approve of, but we have to deal with it, right? And that's exactly what French theory was somewhat different from what existed in this country. That we thought that we have to accept the fact that we are not revolutionaries in abstraction. We live in this system. We belong to it. And what we have to do is redirect the flows of the capital in a certain way. And we have to be as smart. And to be smart, we have to think. The world is striving for thought. That's what it is. And hatred is just a way of revealing, you know, that what we hate is also what we are.
Yes, it's a joke, but, I mean, to even recognize capitalism is a first step, because, of course, capitalism is so completely invisible, you know.
Well, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yes, we live in
it's
a
kind
glamorous
of like the
cocoon,
air, though.
And we hardly ever, you know, imagine anymore that the world could be other than what it is.
But we have a certain number of texts that deal with 80s theory, you know, Baader-Meinhof, the Red Brigades, and all that, because at that time it was a dialectical approach. You know, the idea was that you could set up an army that would be opposed to it and would ally itself with, you know, the international proletariat and the international working class in order to bring down the system. We now realize that the system is not going to let itself be brought down. So we constantly have to invent strategies that are not violent, or that may, you know, be oppositional, but that don't constitute themselves into this little armed group that serve as an excuse for an intensified repression and allow the system to be more, you know, of what it is.
Especially the beginning of the book is full of references to and reports from terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And the word terrorism appears a lot, practically every page towards the beginning of the book. It's painful to participate in this. You know, everything has changed. It's the September 11th discourse, but I'm afraid in some degree it has. So, I mean, how do you handle this word terror? What do you mean by that, and what does it have events reshaped? What you mean by it?
I thought it was amazing that when America finally is attacked. I mean, was attacked from the inside in the 70s and by all sorts of armed groups, but that no one tried to establish a connection between the kind of terrorism that existed there and the kind of terrorism that is being exerted now. Of course, it's not the same, but the idea that terror has what the ultimate result from terrorism in the 80s in Europe is that the state benefited from it massively. And it is the same in this country, too. So what it shows is that whether these theories come from fundamentalism or it comes from political conviction or ideologies, the main result is that since it is a direct attack against the capitalist system is going to bounce back and unfold its own agenda and take advantage of it. And that's what we've seen with Bush. So we have to be smarter than that. And that's exactly why we're talking about terrorism, not to advocate it, but to say, okay, this was an historical experience, and look at what happened to it. Now we have to be terrorists, but with a joy of life, if you want, right? They were too stern, they took themselves too seriously, and they killed, which is not something that I would advocate. And I think it was a wrong way of dealing with the system. The system is much more complex, and you have to have complex ideas to deal with it, and that's what we're trying to provide.
Do you want to add anything to that, Chris Cross?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay. Well, so in the 70s and into the early 80s, we had, you know, that the Baader-Meinhof gang kind of as an imagery of revolution, of group that was confronting the system. Is there anything comparable that you see today?
Yes, of course, the anti-globalization movement. I think they realize that economics and politics is just one of the same thing. At this point, there's a fusion of everything. That's why, you know, it doesn't matter for us if you deal with fiction, with economy, with politics. It's all now political. I mean, it's the same as we were saying in the 60s, but in a different way, that with globalization, which means that everything that's global is politically charged and has to be modulated, opposed, rewritten, etc., etc. It is at this level that things are occurring now, and they can occur on a small level, but also on a very big level.
Okay, well, can you give the listeners a taste of what they might find in the book? Just give a description of what's collected here.
Chris?
Well, yeah, the book has, you know, 20-odd years of high thought via French theory, and activist text, and cutting-edge American fiction. together in a way that completely interrelates and narrates each other.
And I've got to say, it seems very successful because it works for me.
Thank you.
And thank to both of you for being with us, and good luck with the book. And again, the book is Hatred of Capitalism, edited by Chris Krauss and Silvera Loefringer, who we've been speaking with for the last 20 minutes. Thanks for joining us.